Good morning, boys and girls.
It's not even that early. It's like 4 to 9 in the morning. I feel like it's a 4:15. As you might have guessed, it's Fish and Frank. And I'm here with Greg Pleka, one of the few marine biologists I have respect for. Because most of them are just blithering idiots who just, you know, and I kind of get it. I shouldn't say blithering idiots, but they're in it for the money. Because in America right now, if you say, hey, everything's good, you know, it's doing great, and they say, okay, well, we don't need you anymore, and you're out of a job. If you say the sky is falling, everything's going to die, and the world's going to end, they're going to give you more money. And so you can't trust most of them. Greg is one of the few biologists that you can actually trust. Between him and Betty Stogler, they're kind of the go-to for if you really want to know what's going on with the state of wildlife, the marine industry, and all that. And you've got a friend with you here, a co-worker. Who is this?
This is Andrew Woolley. He works on the team with us, and yeah, brought him out. We're heading out today. So,
and very cool. And yeah, I say what I think. I don't like biologists because I think most of them are blithering idiots who get one idea and they're just going to hold that idea until the day they die. And to me, marine biology, and one of the reasons I respect Greg so much, is that his ideas change when he's presented with new ideas. I've never thought of that as flip-flopping. I thought that as growing as an intellectual being. You know, to me, that's the best way to be. And because I used to think I was right about one thing, and now I found out, no, that was pretty much wrong just from direct observation science. So, heck, I'm wrong about everything all the time. But anyway, Greg, what you're with the state marine research people, and they see people see your boats out there, and you're pulling nets, and you're sampling and doing all this stuff out there. How long have you been doing this?
It's a long time, Frank. I mean, you know, I mean, we've been around for, the lab's been here since 1989, and I started working there in March of 1997, so yeah, a little over 20 years.
We've been working together on a lot of different projects over the years, and to me, this is one of the things that we should be funding. We should not be funding shrimp on a treadmill. Did you ever see that?
No, I haven't seen a shrimp.
Thousands of dollars to put a shrimp on a treadmill. Literally, I've seen the video of it. Thousands of dollars. They could have gave that money to you to have actual, real research. And we disagree often, right?
We have discussions, lively discussions. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the fun of learning about the harbor. I mean, that's, people have different perspectives, and it's always good to get both sides.
I just don't want people to think that I'm sitting here buttering you up. If anybody knows me, they know that just doesn't happen. But I think one of the reasons that I respect you is because how many times we've disagreed on stuff. And you'll say, well, I'm doing this, and I'm like, and I rant about it, you know. And we've still been friends all these years. But we work together on a lot of shark research, the sawfish thing, snook stuff. It's been a great part about being in this store is working with you guys. Now, you're going to go out today. What's the goal for today? What are you going to do? What do you expect to find?
Well, I spend most of my time these days working on the small tooth sawfish project that you referenced, and it's an endangered species we have here in Florida. We're still fortunate to have them right out here, in our harbor. Today, we're planning on going down south near Sanibel area. We've been getting some reports through our hotline, that people call in. And so we'll be targeting some kind of what I call medium-sized ones, in the 7 to maybe 10-ish foot range. They get up to, whatever, 17 to 18
foot.
Feet.
Now, is that including the nose?
Yeah, including the saw, yeah. We just include that and, whatever.
Well, it's part of the fish.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like my nose, I've got that Bob Hope thing. It sticks out. I got to have an 8-inch bill on my hat because my nose sticks out so far. But it is still part of me. So how long have you been doing this? Andrew,
I've only been here since March of this year.
So what do you think?
I love it so far. We get the opportunity to go out and catch a fish that's really, really rare, and it's pretty awesome.
Isn't it cool catching dinosaurs?
It is. It's very cool.
It's literally catching a dinosaur, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Especially now that we're going after these like he said, medium-sized ones. They're a little bigger than the ones that we normally see, the small juveniles. So it's nice to catch these bigger ones, too.
Andrew's got a lot of experience catching bigger stuff. He worked down in the Keys for a couple of years, and you know, that experience is coming in real handy when we're kind of targeting these bigger ones. So it's he's a big help.
All right, now we've determined what you're targeting. What do you do with them when you catch them? What's the procedure? I mean, you're catching them, but why?
Well, you know, nobody ever studied these things. I mean, they got put on the endangered species list in 2003, and basically any question anyone would ask, what do they eat? Where do they go? How big do they get? We knew very, very little. No one ever really studied them in any kind of detailed way. So, it makes it difficult on one hand because you don't know anything when you start, but it makes it kind of fun from a scientific perspective, when you can, basically choose what you want to do,
What are you looking for when you catch one of these? Is it just, hey, I caught one and isn't that groovy?
No. We tag them. We use a variety of different tags. We inject them with what's called a PIT tag, a passive integrated transponder tag, same as you would use for your dog or cat, they scan for it kind of thing. We use that. We use an acoustic tag.
The tags that make noise, Shell Harbor has what, about 100 sensors in it? I mean, if you go from the north end all the way down through Sanibel and the near Gulf, there's like 100 sensors here, isn't there?
Yeah, we call them listening stations. So they're basically a hydrophone that records, any fish that swim by, not just sawfish, but snook and, other species. We have collaborators and other scientists that are tagging tarpon, redfish, black-tip sharks. Everybody uses the same equipment.
The cool thing about this is it, as it's all integrated, how it's done though is that each of these things you put in is like a little metal capsule, but it's got a signal generator in it that creates a four-digit number, right?
Yeah, I mean, the codes are unique to each fish. We use different sizes based on the different size fish. So they're anywhere from like a AAA size battery, maybe, up to a, what are those big V16s, Andrew? They're, three times, if you put three AA batteries on top of each other or something, maybe about that size.
But as they're swimming along, they don't know they've got a tag in them, and they swim. And when they go by one of these listening thing sensors, it records that number saying, this fish went by. It's like saying Sally just left here or Joe just left here because 6462 passed by this sensor and then 8647 passed by the sensor. So you literally know which fish, particularly which fish, went by that sensor. So you can track their movements up and down. How far under the Gulf do these sensors go?
At this point, or at least in this part of the Gulf, there aren't that many. There are a few that have been put by some researchers out of St. Pete off of Boca Grande, but there aren't that many out in the Gulf itself. Most of them are in kind of inland areas. We have most of them around the Peace River, the Upper Harbor, and then down around the Coosawhatchee, all throughout the Coosawhatchee and San Carlos Bay down there.
So what you're doing is finding out if, let's say, 6462 went from the Coosawhatchee, and all of a sudden he tracks you. You can track him going up the harbor, maybe up into the Peace River, or back down, or to the Myakka, or on the west side of the harbor, east side, out to Boca Grande Pass. You can tell if that fish goes out into the Gulf.
Yeah. We can kind of, a lot of times we can track them. They'll stay in the, say, at the Upper Harbor for a couple of months, and then we'll see them, hit off on the ones that kind of lead out toward the Gulf. Gives us kind of a clue as to maybe where they went. And there's a big push. There's enough researchers around the Gulf now. There's this group called ITAG, based out of St. Pete, where it's basically a clearinghouse, so to speak, for data. So, if our fish, goes, for example, swam out Boca Grande Pass and hung a right, went north up towards Cedar Key, some researchers up there might record our fish, and they can post the tag number, and then we can go and look at it and say, oh, hey, 4242 went up, to Cedar Key after it left here,
But that's all pretty cool stuff. Now, once you catch this sawfish, you're gonna measure it, weigh it?
We don't weigh them. We do measure them, from tip to tip, to get the accurate measurements on the stretch total length, we call it. We don't get our hands on very many, so we'll give them a full health assessment. See, if they've got any parasites on them or anything. We'll take a little DNA from them. That's been really useful. We can use that in combination with the tagging data, for example, from the DNA, that we get from each fish that we come in contact with, regardless of size. We've been able to show that the adult females are coming back to the Coosawhatchie River on an every other year pattern. And then the adult females there's also another group of them that come back every other year to the
So Peace they River. Alternate years. It's like, okay, I'm going to rent the house this year. You get to rent exactly. The house next year.
Yeah. We have juveniles that come in every year, but it's a kind of an offset group of females. Yeah, it's kind of a cool pattern.
So one doesn't like the other. It's like, no, I don't. I can't stand her. I'm not going with her this year, so we're going to go our own year.
Well, you may know more about their interactions than me, Frank, but,
Your buddy's looking at me like, you really said that? Don't worry, you get used to me after a while. Politically correct and I are in really two separate states. There's everything that happens outside of this door and then stuff that happens in here. I'm firmly stuck in about 1978. Yeah. So anyway.
Some good music back then.
Yeah, fair enough.
But we've been going around and studying a lot of this. Now, you used to do a lot of snook stuff as well. What's been going on with the snook studies lately? I know you hear everything through the grapevine.
Well, I mean, some recent things have been, I don't know if you guys heard about the electrofishing that, Dave Blewett and his colleagues at the lab have been working on. They've been going up in the freshwater areas and using the electroshocker and kind of using the data that they get up further upriver, freshwater, and comparing that to the stuff that we're getting down in the harbor and, kind of putting together some really neat patterns.
I think a very interesting part for me was these Placostomus armored catfish.
Oh, yeah.
That all of a sudden, snook figured out these are good to eat.
Well, a story that, I like to tell about not the Placostomus, but the brown hoplos, same kind of idea.
Look the same, only a little different.
Similar, yeah, vegetarians, but those fish can, both of those species can handle low dissolved oxygen, no problem. So when Hurricane Charlie came through, for example, people that were around then know that the harbor, there was no oxygen, lots of fish kills and stuff. It took a little while for the harbor to kind of come back from that. But during that transition time, the snook were eating the heck out of those, the brown hoplos. Because the hoplos don't, they can handle the low dissolved oxygen, no problem. So, that was a kind of a stopgap for them. They were able to subsist on those until things kind of went back to normal.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because we had so many of them for a while. And then all of a sudden, they just got knocked back immensely. At one point, Iron Hancock Lake, the one just north of Horse Creek, went in there one day, and we were literally putting landing nets outside of the boat and seeing who could catch the most just by idling along. And I think it was like 30 to, 36 or something like that. It was an amazing amount.
Yeah,
and all we were doing was holding in the net and idling forward. And it was crazy. Hey there. You come in and join us. We're almost done. He's got his research team looking at him going, what are you doing?
It's a Fish and Frank story. It's just how it goes.
So, anyway, but it's pretty cool that snook and tarpon are actually eating these things. I'm wondering if somebody's going to bring out a lure that looks like an armored catfish. Yeah, well, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I've been down the road. I've helped with more lures and had designs on lures and all that other kind of stuff. Never made a dime off of it.
You're the idea man, Frank.
Never even got a... I got one thank you, so that was about it. But, so you're going to measure these sawfish, and you take a little clip from a fin or something to get a DNA.
Clip, yep.
And is there anything else that you're going to sample on this? Now, how do you're trying to tell male and female. Are they like a normal shark where you can see the difference?
Yeah, it's small tooth sawfish are rays, actually. You can look at the gill slits on the underside of the body, the pectoral fins, the side fins connect to the head. So they're definitely on in the ray group, but like the sharks, the rays are the same, and you can tell the males and females. The males have the claspers around the pelvic fins.
Okay, do you know off the top of your head, is it you seeing more female? Now, do they stay male and female their whole life? Or are they like so many other creatures that changed? I mean, are they part of the San Francisco crowd, or are they like, you know, more the Midwest group?
They as far as we know, they stay. If it's a male, it's a male. It's a female, it's a female. But one thing neat that we learned from about the males is that they actually have some like a rudimentary ovary that's a part of the entire reproductive system. We're not quite sure about that. They're functional males. But they have, you know, kind of a little bit different reproductive system.
So
there.
Basically, if you put one in an aquarium, it could almost impregnate itself if it had to ensure
the species. Well, the plumbing isn't there. The plumbing isn't there for the males to do that.
Because they've seen that on sharks before, haven't they? Or stuff where there's been one in a tank for years, then all of a sudden there was a baby.
Yeah, so those are females. The females can do that. So they have the reproductive system to be able to produce the young. And it's asexual reproduction, so they're able to make, you know, and the sawfish did that. We actually found three females out here in the harbor that
we better hope human women don't do that, because they don't like us much the way it is.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. You know, if they figure out they really don't need us, we're all in trouble.
Exactly. Yes.
Anyway, so you're gonna be down there sampling, and this is all done with hook and line, right?
Today we'll be using just, you know, we're taking the sport out of it, you know, we're gearing up, you know.
We're going to go extra heavy because the true definition of sportsman is landing the fish in a reasonable amount of time so that they don't get tired out and all that.
Yeah.
Now, I've been hearing slight reports of red tide occurring right down off the Ponarasa because we have that eddy there. When the water comes north to south down the coast, that part of Florida sticks out a little bit, and where that recess is, it kind of swirls the water and makes higher concentrations of red tides and sediments and all that kind of stuff right there off of that area. Have you heard anything down there? Is everything okay? Or
I haven't heard anything about it. We'll be down there today, so we'll you can smell it if it gets bad. So we'll definitely see what's up. Let you know. But
is there some place where people can go to check on your research and the tagging and all that other kind of
stuff?
Yeah,
they can go to the Institute's website if they want. It's will help me out here, guys. myfwc.com/sawfish. /saltwater, yeah, something like that. But if you go to the MyFWC website, you can just search sawfish and you'll find it pretty easy. And then if people see them, you know, if you see one or catch one, it's always helpful for people to call in the hotline too. You can email us sawfish@myfwc.com or call us on our 800 number. It's 844-4-SAWFISH is what the number is.
Okay.
We also have a reporting app that just hot off the press. It's available at the Play Store, and it's called the FWC Reporter. So you can report not just sawfish, but other encounters and fish kills and stuff like that, which is kind of cool.
All right. Yeah, I'm gonna, when we end this, I'm gonna make sure because I don't know why, but I was trying to spell it, type it out while you were saying it, making notes so I could put it all with this.
Yeah.
I don't think I spelled it right. I believe I'm going to have some, tutorials on this. But anything else, Andrew, anything you want to go over? Any kind of points, highlights, anything that you want to talk about? I know you're still going, is this guy nuts? You really? Yes, I talk like this. It's just me.
Yeah, that's fine.
But anything that you want to go over, highlights of the day or anything cool?
Not so much. I mean, we'll see what happens today and see what we can get.
Well, reports, we've had a bunch of reports in that area, right? You've been collecting,
recently.
So.
Recently, in the last week or so, we've had quite a few reports between, like, the lighthouse and Tarpon Bay throughout the Causeway area.
How big are those fish?
Those are anywhere between 6 and 9 feet, about there. So, pretty much right in the target range that we're going for. And after the hurricane, we had a ton of reports from that area. They've kind of tapered off since then, but it seems like there were quite a few being caught in that general area around the lighthouse. So,
you know, I'd be kind of curious because we know right before Charlie there was a mass evacuation out of the harbor of all these fish. There was a lot of fish left the harbor. When will you find out if the same thing happened for Irma?
Well, it's we've been talking about that. Any of these fish that we have the acoustic tags on, because we have the listening stations out there, we left them out. You know, with the hurricane, we talked about, well, should we bring them in or not? And we decided to leave them out. So we'll be looking at those data, in the coming months. And will you let me know? You'll be the first one I talk to, Frankie. I won't tell anybody. You're the first person I'm going to call.
I can literally be the 10th. It's okay. I really would be kind of curious if the fish did like they did for Charlie, because right before Charlie, we had this mass exodus. Fish were just shooting out of the harbor, deep water.
They know what's up. It's pretty cool. Mother Nature's got it figured out.
So, yeah, let me know. And I'd like to do a thing on that to find out if the same thing happened with Irma, or did the fish actually know that Irma wasn't going to be that bad here in the harbor? Whereas with Charlie, for some reason or other, they knew, okay, this is going to get real bad, and they got out. It would be kind of curious if the fish, if they didn't leave, then they knew it wasn't going to be as bad as Charlie. And even though the TV was telling us, everything else was telling us it was going to be as bad or worse, it would be neat to have those reports in real time, because, you guys could go, hey, guys, I really don't think you got to leave. The fish aren't leaving, so I think you're okay. That would be an amazing real-time thing to have. But anyway, okay, Greg, Andrew, and what's your name?
Rachel.
Rachel Scher is the real boss. She really runs the show.
She's been standing in the background with her arms folded looking at us like, come on, guys, shut up, and we got to go to work.
Exactly. She's cracking the whip on us, man.
Hey.
She's a little surprised.
Yeah, but you know, somebody's got to be that person, and it's good it's you. Yeah. I mean, watch out for the little ones. They're mean. Yeah, see, look at her. She's like, who is this idiot? Anyway, thank you much, Greg, Andrew, and Rachel. I appreciate you guys doing a little radio fishing. I'll get my other microphone fixed, so next time we'll have all of us here. All right. Anyway, anything else we should go over before we wrap it up?
That'll do it. Thanks for having us, Frank.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is Ben with Greg Palatka. They're part of the state research team on sawfish and pretty much every other species you can think of. If it's something of concern or something that is of no concern, which impresses me the most, that they're kind of checking everybody and everything. And so, thank you guys, and we'll catch you all on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.